First Susan. I couldn't imagine how it could be difficult. That morning I had energy and I had optimism, and the day began resplendent with sun, and the evening was set to turn lush and hot, the perfect night for our party. All misgivings were erased from my mind as if they'd never been. Except, of course, for Lorraine. Samuel stood by the kitchen sink with a glass of orange juice in his hand and watched me as I packed Ian's lunch.
You're sure you're up to this?
Yes, Samuel, we've been over it. What is there for me to do?
That was the idea, but I want you to tell me if we need to call this off.
I finished my coffee, set the mug in the dishwasher. No, I feel fine. Better than fine, actually.
If I can't manage this, then there's no hope for me. You and Jim are going to grill the meat, so all I need to do is get it in the marinade when I get home.
I meant to shop that day. A number of purchases, items endlessly essential, it now seemed so clear. New dress and shoes and necklace to match. The religious study book with the title that had spoken straight to me. A whirl of plans to combat her schemes. I zipped the soft side lunch bag. Meredith's going to help me set up the patio, and then the catered stuff comes, and then you'll come, and everything should all turn out.
I would like to suppose there's hope for you, said Samuel.
I felt the dark ripple through my morning. I'm trying, was all I could say, but no one calls me back. Not even the secretary, I'd noticed.
Maybe you should try somewhere else.
That was what I was starting to think, but I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't. God wouldn't ignore me that way. I don't want to give up yet. I ran some more water in the vase of orange and yellow daylilies, cut that morning, put it back on the counter.
Giving up would not be like you, he said.
And I don't recall that that was what was said. Okay, yes, I understand, I said. Let me think about it. I've got to get Ian. We need to get on the road.
I'll see you tonight, he said, as I turned to leave the room. Be careful with yourselves.
Ian sat in his high chair, eating the last of his dry Cheerios with that stuffed sheep, Lamekin, snug and eyeing me in the crook of his arm. It was still hard for me to face my son. But today, I felt that being a good mother could begin again, that I could come to understand why I'd stopped. Perhaps God would reveal that to me, too, in the book I'd been given to write.
"Mommy, go,"
said Ian, his mouth full. He thrust Lamekin and his empty bowl toward me. The door closed as Samuel began his weekday morning trip to the courthouse. Come on, I said, walking to retrieve my son from his high chair, much more patiently on this absurdly beautiful Friday in June. Let's go get this day. So here's how Lorraine became a reality to my life. We were at breakfast, Samuel, Ian, and I, eating hard-boiled eggs and English muffins. The last of the baby pink Valentine's roses from Samuel slowly, faintly withering as our table's centerpiece. Extra crisp bacon set out for Samuel and Ian, slices of orange for Ian and me.
Mike Davis's wife, Samuel said, would enjoy joining us on Tuesdays.
Ever since it had begun 3 years before, our Tuesday circle had continued unchanged.
He mentioned she's a banjo player looking for some friends to make a little music with, said Samuel. So I mentioned our little soiree. I didn't see the harm.
I have always been more territorial than I would like to admit. Of course not. It'd be good for her.
It would be a kindness. Mike's certainly been an outsized help to me in the time he's worked here.
I assumed Mrs. Davis and her husband, Samuel's new judicial secretary, were good country people, since that's how Samuel had said they came to us in Millsboro, each from some humble household somewhere.